Welcome to Afterglow. I'm your host, Mark Chilla. There was a period of time in the mid-1970s when Stevie Wonder could seemingly do no wrong, his so-called classic period. But before this, he was known as Little Stevie Wonder, a multi-talented teenager signed to Motown Records, still discovering his voice. And that's my focus this week. The 1960s for Stevie Wonder is an interesting chapter in pop music history, as Motown Records tried to figure out how to market this young phenom, while Stevie tried to develop his own sound. It's a journey of hits and misses through pop, soul, jazz, and the Great American Songbook. It's Stevie Wonder in the 1960s, coming up next on Afterglow. Stevie Wonder in 1969 with the 1951 Rodgers and Hammerstein song Hello Young Lovers, originally from the musical The King and I. That comes from Wonder's 1969 album My Cherie Amour, an eclectic mix of jazz standards and newer material recorded in a variety of styles. So while Wonder might have taken an old pop standard like Hello Young Lovers, once sung by crooners like Frank Sinatra and Perry Como, and felt the need to turn it into a groovy up-tempo R&B tune, that wasn't always the case. Just a few tracks later on the same album, he took the newer pop standard, Johnny Mandel and Paul Francis Webster's The Shadow of Your Smile, from the 1965 film The Sandpiper and performed it in a pretty typical manner, not unlike how Tony Bennett, Bobby Darin, or Frank Sinatra had recently performed it.
The shadow of your smile when you are gone will color all my dreams and light the dawn. Look into my eyes, my love, and see
Mark Chilla here on Afterglow. On this show, we're looking at the 1960s work of Stevie Wonder. This show is in some ways a follow-up to two different shows I've done in the past, one on Aretha Franklin and one on Marvin Gaye. For all three of these artists, Franklin, Gaye, and Wonder, their talent was clear from the outset. However, these kinds of singular talents don't always have a clear place in the established music industry, at least at first. So the first several years of their careers are often a series of false starts and missteps, as record labels figure out how to place them, and the artists themselves figure out what kind of career they want. In the case of all three of these artists, those early career maneuvers all took a detour into the music of the Great American Songbook. Steve Lind Hardaway Morris, dubbed Little Stevie Wonder, was a prodigy. Born in Michigan in 1950 and blind from birth, the young Steve Lind showed immense talent at nearly every instrument he could get his hands on. At age 11, he was signed to nearby Motown Records and given his stage name. At first, Wonder was thought of as mostly a novelty, a blind preteen who could sing and play harmonica, keyboards, bongos, and the drum set, as well as any professional musician. His first two albums, recorded shortly after he was signed to Motown and released within a month of each other in 1962, show right away how Motown was grappling with exactly how to market their new young talent. One album featured all instrumentals, with Stevie being showcased on drum set, bongos, piano, organ, and harmonica. It was called The Jazz Soul of Little Stevie, demonstrating that, even at the beginning, Motown knew that Stevie Wonder's talent was bigger than just one genre. Besides showing off the talent of Motown's young star, which even then was better than some of the other players on the record, the album was unremarkable. The only notable song was the opening track, an original song called Fingertips, named because it was a showcase for Wonder's skill with his fingertips on the bongos. This song plays an important part in Stevie Wonder's musical history, but we'll get to that a little bit later. The other album he recorded showed off the young musician's still underdeveloped voice, and was an even more crude marketing ploy from Motown. Called Tribute to Uncle Ray, the album featured all covers of Ray Charles songs, clearly and shamelessly drawing a connection between those two blind musicians. Besides that most obvious similarity, Little Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles, who was 20 years older than Stevie, didn't really have all that much in common. There was a raw sensuality in Ray Charles's gospel and blues-inspired vocals, and an infectious, exciting young pop energy to Wonder, an energy that would stick with him for the rest of his career. To hear this preteen growl through a Charles blues number like Drown in My Own Tears just falls flat.
Yes, I'll drown in my own tears. I've seen
However, even early on, you can hear the seeds of the talent that would soon begin to blossom. Here now is Stevie Wonder in 1962, performing the Ray Charles song, Ain't That Love, on Afterglow.
Now, baby, when you sigh,
an 11-year-old Stevie Wonder performing the Ray Charles song Ain't That Love from one of Stevie Wonder's first Motown records, Tribute to Uncle Ray. After the critical and commercial failure of Stevie Wonder's first two albums, Motown didn't drop him from the label, but rather they put him on the road. He became part of a Motown musical review that traveled around the country. Motown recorded one of these reviews on June 1st, 1962, at Chicago's Regal Theater. That night, the so-called 12-year-old genius, Little Stevie Wonder, put on quite the show, performing his song, Fingertips. In the song, you can hear the struggle play out between the hemmed-in Motown product and the uninhibited artist just waiting to burst out. Fingertips Part 1, which you're hearing right now, is Little Stevie playing the song as is from the record. It's energetic, but still a bit conservative, featuring even a little bit of traditional jazz harmony. But when the song should have ended, the 12-year-old Stevie, brimming with talent, refused to leave the stage. From here on out, it was all soul and all Stevie. This remarkable second part of the song, Fingertips Part 2, was packaged and released as a single. In 1963, the single hit number one on the Billboard pop charts, becoming Stevie Wonder's first number one song, and his only number one single for almost a decade. Here is Little Stevie Wonder live at Chicago's Regal Theater with Fingertips Part 2 on Afterglow. Little Stevie Wonder, the 12-year-old genius in 1962, with his first number one single, a live performance of his instrumental song, Fingertips. After this initial success, Stevie Wonder's career still stagnated for a while. A few factors played into this. One was the young man's changing voice, which was still in need of some polish. It made for several records through the mid-1960s that didn't quite represent the immensity of his talent.
Without a song, the day will never end.
The other was Motown's direction. With a new pop chart-topping phenom, Motown decided to push Stevie Wonder towards a broader audience, instead of realizing that the key to Wonder's success was actually his precocious independence. This push towards a broader audience meant that Stevie's next album was an album of jazz and pop standards, called With a Song in My Heart. They even brought in veteran jazz arranger Ernie Wilkins, who had worked with Sarah Vaughan and Dinah Washington, to write the arrangements. The arrangements were good, but it was Wonder who lacked the ability, again, mostly due to a changing voice. However, there's also a sense that perhaps a 13-year-old might not have been ready to interpret the Great American Songbook, music usually performed by singers at least twice his age. I'll play something from that record now. This is Stevie Wonder from his 1964 album With a Song in My Heart, performing the Charlie Chaplin standard, Smile. on Afterglow.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile, throw off fear and sorrow. Smile, it may be tomorrow. You'll find the sun shining through for you.
When the sun comes shining through,
light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be
A 13-year-old Stevie Wonder with the pop standard Smile from his 1963 album With a Song in My Heart, an album of jazz and pop standards arranged by Ernie Wilkins. With a Song in My Heart was not a hit for Stevie Wonder, so for his next record, Motown turned him away from the middle-of-the-road Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole route and back towards the teen market. The album Stevie at the Beach was clearly trying to capitalize on the Beach Boys-era surfer music trend, although Motown's interpretation of it. Stevie had also made guest appearances in films like Bikini Beach, starring Annette Funicello, at this time. The single from this record was a showcase for Little Stevie's instrumental chops, a novelty record called Hey Harmonica Man, which was a modest hit. But it also included some more traditional numbers, including instrumental versions of standards like Red Sails in the Sunset, plus newer pop standards like this next song. Here is Stevie Wonder with the Charles Trenet and Jack Lawrence song Beyond the Sea on Afterglow.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me. Somewhere
Teenage Stevie Wonder with the pop standard Beyond the Sea from his 1964 album Stevie at the Beach. Coming up after a short break, Stevie Wonder comes into his own as we continue to explore the young musician's work in the 1960s. Stay with us. I'm Mark Chilla, and you're listening to Afterglow. Welcome back to Afterglow. I'm Mark Chilla. We've been looking at the 1960s work of musician Stevie Wonder, a time before his classic period in the 1970s, when the young singer was experimenting with pop, soul, jazz, and the Great American Songbook. A very important thing happened to Stevie Wonder around 1965. His voice changed. Now 15 years old, Wonder was beginning to shed his little Stevie kid persona and starting to move into his own as a singer, performer, and songwriter. Uptight, Everything's All Right, released in November 1965, was the single that saved Stevie Wonder's career. He hadn't had a hit since 1963's Fingertips Part 2, and with Uptight, Stevie Wonder and Motown found the magic formula, although they didn't quite realize it yet. Uptight was co-written by Wonder, along with his frequent collaborators Hank Cosby and Sylvia Moy. With Wonder as a co-writer, it shows the artist now shaping his own destiny, instead of just being pushed around by the label. In this way, it's very much like his first hit, Fingertips Part 2, a moment when the precocious 12-year-old defied his handlers and kept performing on stage in the way he wanted to. However, on his 1966 album called Uptight, Motown still kept pushing Wonder towards a crossover audience. So for every pure R&B song like Nothing's Too Good for My Baby, you have a cover of a song like Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind, or a more traditional jazz standard like the Gene DePaul and Sammy Kahn song Teach Me Tonight. Teach Me Tonight was always a bluesy standard. One of the first and finest recordings of this tune came in 1955 from Count Basie and the blues shouter Joe Williams.
Did you say I've got a lot to learn? Well, don't think I'm trying not to learn, since this is the perfect spot to learn. Teach me tonight.
In Stevie Wonder's hands, it's much more rhythm than blues, sung as a duet with Motown label mates The Four Tops. It's amazing how in just about a year's time, Stevie Wonder's voice had become strong enough to spar with the great Levi Stubbs of The Four Tops, one of the finest R&B vocalists of all time. Here's that recording now. This is Stevie Wonder and the Four Tops in a song released in 1966, the jazz standard Teach Me Tonight on Afterglow.
Did you say I've got a lot to learn? Oh, don't think I'm trying not to learn, since this is a perfect spot to learn. Come on and teach me tonight. Shooting star goes by, I'll use that star to write I love you a thousand times across the sky.
One thing isn't very clear, Stevie, should the teacher stand so near?
Oh no,
right away, she's almost here, and I want to be taught tonight.
Stevie Wonder and the Four Tops, featuring their lead singer Levi Stubbs, performing the Gene DePaul and Sammy Kahn standard Teach Me Tonight. That's from Stevie Wonder's 1966 album Uptight. Wonder's follow-up to Uptight, the 1966 album Down to Earth, was a commercial step back for the artist. It produced one single, the Ron Miller and Brian Wells song A Place in the Sun, a fairly conservative, middle-of-the-road pop single.
Like a long, lonely stream, I keep running towards a dream, moving on.
A Place in the Sun became a kind of pop standard, sung by Diana Ross, Glen Campbell, and even Freddie Cole, Nat King Cole's brother. Down to Earth also included a few more Stevie Wonder originals, written alongside his collaborators Hank Cosby and Sylvia Moy. The original song, Thank You, Love, is notable because it shows Wonder, who mostly wrote the music, not the lyrics, stretching his harmonic boundaries and demonstrating a growing sophistication. The chord progression of Thank You, Love, full of borrowed and seventh chords, is now starting to resemble Wonder's more jazz-inspired songs from the 1970s. Let's listen to that now. Here is Stevie Wonder in 1966 with his original song, Thank You, Love, on Afterglow.
Thank you, love. You made me happy in so many ways. Through all my sweet and tender yesterday, you were the sunshine I needed, love. You were there.
Stevie Wonder with Thank You, Love, a song he co-wrote with Hank Cosby and Sylvia Moy for his 1966 album Down to Earth. In 1967, Wonder's next album, I Was Made to Love Her, brought him further away from the jazz and middle-of-the-road pop sound and towards something much more R&B heavy. On this record, his music resembles something more akin to the late 1960s Motown sound, developed by the Four Tops, the Temptations, and the backing band the Funk Brothers, something that was driving, raw, and edgy. The album featured covers of earlier Motown and R&B hits like The Temptations' My Girl, Aretha Franklin's Respect, and James Brown's Please, Please, Please. And it also featured his number two pop single, I Was Made to Love Her. Let me play that song now. This is Stevie Wonder in 1967 with the R&B song, I Was Made to Love Her, on Afterglow. Stevie Wonder with his 1967 R&B hit, I Was Made to Love Her, from the album of the same name. That was co-written by Wonder, Hank Cosby, Sylvia Moy, and Wonder's mother, Lula Mae Hardaway. After the album I Was Made to Love Her, Stevie Wonder's career took a few odd detours. The end of 1967 saw a Christmas album called Someday at Christmas.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys.
And later in 1968, Wonder recorded the instrumental Easy Listening album, curiously titled Ivett's Red Now, which is Stevie Wonder spelled backwards. This album was centered around Wonder's harmonica cover of the Burt Bacharach song Alfie, which actually became a minor pop hit for Wonder in 1968. Finally, at the end of 1968, Wonder found his way back with the album For Once in My Life. The centerpiece of this album was actually a song made famous by none other than Tony Bennett. The song For Once in My Life was written as a ballad back in 1965 by Motown songwriters Orlando Murden and Ron Miller. Miller had also co-written Stevie Wonder's songs A Place in the Sun and Someday at Christmas. They had shopped around this song to a few different Motown artists and other jazz and pop singers, and in 1967, it finally fell into the lap of Tony Bennett.
For once unafraid I can go where life leads me, and somehow I know I'll be strong.
Bennett was able to turn For Once in My Life into a respectable pop standard. Around the same time, the song also made its way to Ron Miller's old buddy, Stevie Wonder, who transformed the ballad into an up-tempo R&B number. The song was shelved for several months, but when it was finally released at the end of 1968, a year after Bennett's version, it climbed to number 2 on the Billboard pop charts. Here's that song now, Stevie Wonder and For Once in My Life, on Afterglow.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew. Someone warm like you would make my dream come true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me, not like it's hurt me before. For once I have something I know won't desert me. I'm not alone anymore.
Shall get, then that not shall lose. So the Bible says, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, God bless the child who's got his own. Yeah, he's got his own. Yes, the strong gets more, while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the great. No, 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 no. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child who's got his own. Yeah, it's got his own. And spending it, but it don't come around anymore. myself, but oh, don't take too much. No, 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 Mama may have, Papa may have, God bless the child, has got his own.
Two songs from the 1968 Stevie Wonder album For Once in My Life. Just now, we heard his cover of the Billie Holiday and Arthur Herzog song God Bless the Child, one of the many jazz standards he recorded in the late 1960s. Before that, Wonder's hit version of the Ron Miller and Orlando Murden song For Once in My Life, made famous the previous year by singer Tony Bennett. Stevie Wonder's final album from the 1960s, My Cherie Amour, from 1969, is also the final album that showed Wonder fully under the creative control of Motown producers. The album, then, is a curious mix of jazz standards like Rodgers and Hammerstein's Hello, Young Lovers, pop covers like The Doors' Light My Fire, and new material like the title track. This mix highlights both Wonder's growing ability as a jazz-inspired songwriter alongside his funk and R&B credibility. So on the one hand, you have a Stevie Wonder original, like My Cherie Amour, co-written again with Hank Cosby and Sylvia Moy, full of sophisticated jazz chord progressions, not unlike those heard on the 1966 song Thank You, Love, and on later Stevie Wonder originals. But on the other hand, you have the 1941 jazz standard At Last by Harry Warren and Mack Gordon, turned by Stevie Wonder into a driving, up-tempo R&B song. I'll play that song in just a moment. His treatment of this song is not unlike what he did to For Once in My Life. By the 1970s, on albums like Signed, Sealed, and Delivered, Music of My Mind, Talking Book, or Songs in the Key of Life, these jazz standards had been scrubbed from Wonder's output. With Wonder now in the driver's seat of his own production and songwriting, the 1970s were a period defined by a unified sound and complete creative control. That precocious, independent 12-year-old from 1962 had finally come into his own, forming a unique mix of jazz, R&B, and pop, shaped by the creative challenges and missteps of the 1960s. To close off this hour, let's hear one of the last jazz standards Stevie Wonder ever recorded, his 1969 recording of Harry Warren and Mack Gordon's At Last on Afterglow. from Stevie Wonder's 1969 album My Cherie Amour. That was the Harry Warren and Matt Gordon standard, At Last. And thanks for tuning into this look at Stevie Wonder in the 1960s on Afterglow. Next week, in our celebration of African American Music Appreciation Month, we'll take a look at another black artist who blurred the boundaries between genres, Roberta Flack. I hope you'll listen. Afterglow is part of the educational mission of Indiana University and produced by WFIU Public Radio in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana. The executive producer is John Bailey. Playlists for this and other Afterglow programs are available on our website. That's at indianapublicmedia.org/afterglow. I'm Mark Chilla, and join me next week for our mix of vocal, jazz, and popular song from the Great American Songbook, here on Afterglow.